everyone, and welcome to the American Scouser Podcast. Another Monday night, we are back in action. All the mood should be great right after Easter. Happy Dingus Day to all those who celebrate. We celebrate the hell out of it this morning with Matush over here. And I am your host, as always, Timuchin, here in a rainy and miserable Chicago with nervous dogs and me not sleeping a whole lot. So it's supposed to be like this for the next 2-3 days. So it's been quite painful and rainy. But it's the usual crew with us. Galley, what's happening?
I need an explanation here. Your dogs don't sleep in the rain?
Dude, so the storm, I don't know what the hell is going on, right? The storm, I can see. Stitch, and I don't know what this is, but... And, you know, if there are any dog whisperers and dog experts in the audience, maybe they can share it. He tries to be, I'm assuming because the ground shakes or something and he can feel it. He tries to get as high as possible. Like if it was a cat, he would climb the freaking thing. But he's a big ass golden retriever, so he can't. So he will actually try to not even on the couch, like the top of the couch kind of a thing. And now he tries to come upstairs and they're not allowed upstairs because we don't like sleeping in a bed of dog hair. So upstairs is ours. They can roam wherever they want downstairs. So that was a storm thing. And we were like, ah, shit. So it doesn't storm. So I don't know what the hell happens. But now he's freaking out. Something must have happened on a rainy day. Now he's freaking out when it rains hard. Not a drizzle. And it's been raining pretty hard like all day and like all night last night too. So, and then Leo obviously doesn't know what the hell is going on. He's looking at Stitch. He's like, should we be worried? We should be freaking out, right? Yeah, we should freak out. So let me freak out with you. So they're both freaking out. It's mass confusion. He was already pissed off that Diaz's goal didn't get overturned by VAR. So he's been having he had a rough Easter.
I feel like we need to get these dogs on a Turkish immersion program so they can like experience an earthquake or two, and that'll get it out of them, right?
Yeah, I don't know what the deal is, but yeah. I mean, yeah, like this height thing, I don't know. Stitch has always been like that, trying to climb on top of things because he doesn't. And like I say, I can only assume it's the vibration and stuff. But now
it's definitely that he just wants to get taller than you. So he figures if he just keeps going up on things,
that should not take a whole lot.
He gets near the edge of the couch, he might just get over you. He's like, now I am king of this castle in the rain.
Let's hope he's just not the kid from like Almost Famous and up there because he's on acid or something, you know? Like,
I'm gonna
jump from the roof. Like,
yeah. Poor Stitch. Like I say, it's been rough. It's been rough. Nothing better than watching the Monday Night Pod while breaking fast. Oh, okay. that's right.
Eating's great. We obviously endorse that big time here.
We strongly endorse all
congratulations kind of and on
here at American Scouser. Yes, we do.
Absolutely,
our general shape and disposition.
But yeah, that is the explanation for Stitch and Leo's stressful days. And yeah, there is more to come, I'm sure, on over the next 2-3 days. You guys have dogs. Am I the only one with nervous dogs? Maybe my nerves are kind of like passing on to them or something.
Oh, he can get weird about certain things. He doesn't, rain doesn't do it too much for him. He just doesn't want to go outside in the rain. And, you know, like Paul and I dog, they're like real big, fluffy, hairy, furry dogs. And he like goes out there and he gets irritated. So like, he'll like literally get to the edge of the door. And if it's like downpouring, he just looks at me and he's like, nah, man, I'd rather piss on your floor. Like, I won't do it, but I'd rather, just so we're clear. And you know what? If I do, she might appreciate it because she'll make you clean up the piss and then she won't have a soaking wet dog laying on top of her. And my wife would probably be like, yeah, actually, all of that makes sense.
See, that's Leo yesterday. He had no idea. This is going to be a dog podcast tonight, but he had no idea it was really pouring. Whenever you're close to the door, he wants to go out. So I opened the door and he jetted out. And then Stitch is like, it's raining, bro. Like, and it was like raining hard too. So Leo runs out. He was like, holy mother of God. And he ran back in, but they don't care. Then he's like soaking wet. They'll walk around in the rain. They'll do their business, come back in, and then just jump next to me. Like, what are we doing? Playing PlayStation? And I'm like, yeah, now I'm freaking wet. Thanks a lot. Appreciate the kind of thing. Yeah. How about yours there, Bickler? Let's do a dog.
No, mine,
weather update. We should start doing dog updates as well.
Yeah, he gets she gets relatively offended if it's raining. Like, she just look at me like, why are we even out here? Like, you know, like, I can hold it for like 3 days. Let's go inside. Like, but yeah, I think typically my house is chaotic enough that she's not scared by storms, because anything that happens inside is just as scary. So
fair.
I guess, yeah. She's like, it's nice and peaceful out here, probably is what your dog is thinking. But let's get to this. We skipped it last week. I let you guys have a week off in the spirit of whatever and laziness. But now we're back to the trivia. So I am taking questions, because I'm otherwise we're going to be back to my questions over here. So we are taking on Sheffield United. So I'm assuming you guys crammed the results already.
I have a question for you. If I give you a trivia question from the first 6 minutes of the match on Sunday, would you be able to answer it, or would your answer be, my alarm clock was set for the wrong day?
Okay. Let me get that question out of the way.
Oh, he's a girl.
The night before I go, you know, for like normally it's 8:10 is my alarm for the morning show, right? And so I'm really smart. I'm like, the alarm. So I go and I change the.
Already sounds like a really long excuse.
Go to bed. Wake up at freaking 8:15 because my body is like, hey, it's time to get up. I wake up, I look at the phone to see. I was like, man, it's too bright in this room for like 7 o'clock or before 7. I look at the phone, it says like 8:15 or something. Like, I was like, fuck. Then I look at the notifications, and one of them says Liverpool 0, Brighton 1. I was like, fuck. I'm like, this is a horrible way to wake up over here. So yeah, I ran down. I watched it afterwards, but that's why I hopped on Discord and asked you guys to give an update on how the game was going. But because honestly, like, normally I would have just assumed that it was a regular slow start or something like that, but definitely did not seem like it. Yeah, Anand's, yes, everything in Anand's household updates operates the Windows 95 system, so everything is really slow.
His TV updates about as fast as Shelton's internet picks up a signal. My God.
Anand once missed the morning show updating his computer. So that's how long it takes to update. So let's get back to trivia over here. We're taking on Sheffield.
That's not.
This will be our 12th game against them in the Premier League, which means there are 11 games already played for those doing math, Bickler. What is our record in those 11 games?
Oh, fuck's sake, dude.
These are easy, man. These are beach balls.
Let's go 7 wins, 2 draws, 1 loss. I don't know. That's not even right math. 2 draws, 2 losses, 7 wins.
I was going to go 8-2-1.
I can feel like the hamster was running. Then
7-2-2. 7-2-2.
7-2-2.
I'm going to go 9 wins, 1 draw, 1 loss.
Bickler nails it, 7-2-2 with the rebound tap in at the end. He originally had 7-2-1, yeah, but he just tucked taps. Correct. In the last loss. Yes, 7 wins, 2 draws, 2 losses. It's our 12th matchup. Honestly, like, when I looked at the overall record, I figured that it was going to be too tricky because it goes to like the 30s and 40s and stuff like that. Yeah. It's kind of as lopsided as you would think that this one is, you know, like, based on which direction both clubs have had it. But so we kind of talked about it. We kind of like give him a goal to go, and honestly, Welbeck hits that 10 times. I don't think it gets to that specific spot again. But overall, Galley, it wasn't like a poor, slow start that we're like, oh, we had to wake up kind of thing. It was just kind of like a free counter where they took their chance to take the lead.
It was 90 seconds in, and it took, there could have been a little better defending, a little better closing down. Maybe we could make it a little harder on him, but the ball bounces to his foot and he reaches back, hits a ball, and he hits it better than he's hit a ball in 10 years.
33 years. He's 33 years old, by the way. Yeah. We're looking at it this morning.
He's had some pretty good goals in his career, actually. I think he's had better goals than that in his career, but not many. He strikes that ball so firm, so perfect. There's nothing you can do about it. I do think there were some things that the defense could have done in that moment, but it's 90 seconds in, and you don't expect them to come at you that way. I don't love giving up a goal in the first 5 minutes of a game at home. That's like a must-win match on a day where the title could be determined and all that. But as Paul and I talked about in the Premier League show, this team has just shown a propensity to show up and show out, and they don't get too high and they don't get too low. And they never looked. Within 5 minutes, they had 100% a foothold on that match, and they started applying the pressure that was going to go the rest of the game. The scary part is all that pressure gave us two goals and one that might have been chalked off or offside. So, but I all in all, wasn't too chafed about it. I don't think that was one of our proverbial, you know, didn't show up for the lunchtime kickoff. We were fine to play that match. Brighton was a little better for the first 2 minutes.
See, I'm glad you kind of mentioned that, because Bigler, is that like, have we prepared ourselves for this moment in some ways by conceding all these early goals, which is never a good thing, especially when you wake up late and you look at your phone. But, you know, we've always complained about it. You know, we said, why is it happening? Try to dissect it and stuff. But in a weird kind of way, has it brought us to the point that Galley's talking about, where they're like, that's fine. This happens all the time. We just come back.
Yeah, I feel like this entire season has done that, right? And I think it's really interesting because this doesn't feel like one of those games, like Galley said, where we came out and we deserve to go 1-0 down just because we were sleeping, right? Like, this didn't feel like that. but I do think this team's almost built an identity on, like, just this kind of resilience where they almost, like, take games and then constrict them almost like a boa constrictor and just squeeze it, like, and apply pressure to the point where it just becomes, the pressure becomes so immense that the team that they're playing just essentially cracks. Like, that's what it feels like this team does over time. And I thought they did that, you know, extremely well. Like we talked about it earlier. I think the only frustrating thing is, like, right now you could maybe say, like, we're not as clinical as you'd like to see us be, because, like, not finding that third goal is extremely scary in a league that can't seem to find any sort of standardized version of refereeing.
Yes. And I think, I mean, like I say, I worry as a lifestyle anyway, but one thing that, you know, Klopp was talking about, and I do want to get to that in terms of protecting the lead at the end of the game. He was talking about, like, how the crowds, and as a Liverpool fan, maybe we're a lot more used to it, and normally we're a lot more comfortable than maybe we were like 5-6 years ago when he first arrived, kind of a thing. So I do want to get to how we closed out the game, but let's go back to the first half. Brian Shelton was mentioning in the comments that the right side was really, I mean, I blame Trent personally, but that right side was really struggling in defending there, Galley. But then we kind of like made the adjustments. But even in the first half, when we were getting those chances, you kind of had a feeling where, man, they can still hurt us. They can still get something from the side.
Yeah, well, I mean, we talked about it in the Discord, and I think you and Kazi and Maka, or whoever, Sir Z, I think it was, in the post-match, you talked a little bit about Salah's defending or lack thereof, and how he's kind of been told he doesn't have to defend. And I think it's all easy and good to say you don't have to do something until you got a kid out there on an island trying to, you know, make heads or tails. And if you had gotten up in time for the pre-match show, you would have heard that I said the player that scared me the most was the Adingra kid.
Once, I swear,
man. And then that Adingra kid just came right down and just basically ate up he ate up our right hand defense for the entire first half. And I mean, his run is the reason for the first goal, even though it's Welbeck's worldy. It's everything Adingra does. And I just wanted to give you shit about oversleeping again. But the truth is, Mo was, I think he was a little frustrated. He didn't have his shooting boots in the first half. He missed the target a few times. He fluffed his lines a few times. I think he knew didn't take that ball down on the McAllister pass that he could have set Darwin up. I think there were a lot in the first half that Mo was kind of down on. And I think sometimes when Mo's not clicking offensively, he takes his 50% fucks and turns them into 100% zero fucks on defense. And that's what it looked like to me. And it was a game where McAllister was already trying to do a lot in that midfield to kind of balance things out. And I think it kept putting Bradley in tough spots, because Bradley was going forward to support Mo in attack, and then nobody was coming back to help Bradley in defense except for an 18-year-old kid. And it felt like they were just – it felt like De Zerbi targeted that. And
it's a well-known thing that that's what the side you're going to target, right? Even though Gomez is out of position, he has his pace and everything like that and his experience. Not to mention Van Dijk is on that side, so it makes it a less likely side to attack. But, I mean, it's part of our tactics, Bickler, to have Mo play the way he is. Like, he's the counter outlet and stuff like that. I mean, that's nothing new. Isn't it kind of like, did the adjustments come too late? Because obviously we made the adjustments at halftime and it wasn't an issue afterwards. But I was worried throughout the first half, even after we got the equalizer, that I'm like, we might get another goal coming from that side, because every time they came down, it was dangerous.
Yeah, I mean, it did feel like a late adjustment, given what we were watching. I think it's interesting, the Mo thing. I think it's partially true, but I mean, let's face it, dude. It's been like this for 7 or 8 years, yeah, right? So, correct. Like, I think the main difference is that, like, to me, if anything, it probably highlights how special Jordan Henderson was at what he did, right? Yeah. Like, in terms of, like, what he did from a positional standpoint with the underlap and the way that he sort of controlled and really tied both deficiencies for whatever Mo has defensively and whatever Trent has defensively together and sort of gelled that together. So I think there's still, like, I still think there's an element of newness in the midfield that definitely contributes to that. But, yeah, I think we adjusted. I do think it was a late adjustment. I do think that side is always going to be targeted. But at the same time, I think when we look at these things, especially when we concede goals, we tend to want to identify part of it that we recognize and control on our side, right? The things that we're familiar with, instead of just crediting Brighton to being better in an area. And I think, to Galley's point, that kid is outstanding and he's been outstanding all year and he's got pace to burn. He's going to cause any team problems on that side. So I definitely think that you gotta consider that and, like, tip their hat there. That kid's a handful.
Yeah, I mean, in some ways, I do agree to that. And, like, the Mo not defending thing, I mean, that, like I said, it's been part of the whole system, really. So that's nothing new. But, yeah, that's a good point. Probably Henderson ran twice as much. But along the same lines, you know, I think, you know, Mac in the first half was more on that right-hand side, because I was all confused because I thought they kept swapping. But obviously that goes back to me getting up late and starting in, like, 20th minute. But I think, you know, Mac has a lot of responsibilities that include, like, attacking wise that maybe we did not expect out of Henderson either, and that Mac is constantly having to do that. Go ahead, Gal.
That was what I was going to say, and I was with Paul. I think it does actually exemplify how important Henderson was and all the little things he did that no one gave him credit for, other than those sideways passes, for all you lovers and haters out there. But I think McAllister has quickly become the most important person in the entire side, to be honest. He was by far, it wasn't even close, he was the best player on the pitch. And he was closely by Endo. And I love when Klopp was like, did you see the two of them? They looked at each other at the 90th minute in their eyes. And it looked like they knew what they were doing the entire time. But he was spot on. These guys were literally in unison the entire match. Like, it was poetry. But I think we're now asking what we thought we were going to get out of Szoboszlai from the right-hand mid replacing Jordan Henderson, we're now asking McAllister to do, which is be the driving creative force going forward to help unlock the low block and when teams set up to defend. And, I mean, you see it in that pass on the goal. I'm sure we'll talk about it. But I think Maka's role doing that is taking him out of some of the positions that maybe we were used to, that midfielder in our 4-3-3, you know, to Paul's point. We might not know the players, but we damn well know the tactics that we're going to play and how we're going to be set up. And I think that's starting to change. And I think that right-sided midfielder, because Maka has moved into it more, has been a little bit more of his kind of freedom role to go forward and be more attacking. And I think it's leaving a little bit of the defensive areas open. So they're probably just going to have to figure that out and balance it out as long as he's playing on the side with Mo, if he's going to be the most attack-minded midfielder.
But I'll tell you, when Szoboszlai was there afterwards, like when they would swap and he took – and honestly, like, Szoboszlai probably played one of his better games recently, especially defensive work rate.
Second half, yes.
The first half, that's what – I felt like he was, like, out of sorts and out of place in the first half, and it felt more natural to him in the second half. And obviously, you know, the goal comes from him being on the right wing and place, and I think he feels more home there. Even though when they played Turkey, he was more central and left when he was playing for Hungary for the national team. I guess my question then is to you, Bickler. Normally we had, you know, Trent pushing up in that spot and Henderson would just cover the back. So the creativity comes from the wing through Trent, right? So now you got a lot of creativity coming from Mac. And I think if we are able to keep that and add Trent on the wing, that is kind of like a deadly combination. However, then who does the defending? Or what do we have to do to adjust that? Or will Szoboszlai be on the right-hand side with Trent and he is the one constantly tracking back, but he's not that tight?
So you're telling me I can go back to having dreams of a 4-2-3-1? That's what I'm hearing. I think you're right. I think that's the dilemma, right? Like if you have somebody like Mac and you want him to eat up that final third of the midfield, then you're going to have some serious deficiencies behind you unless you're playing with a traditional fullback, right? I mean, I think that's the bottom line is you have to have traditional fullback play if you want McAllister to be all the way up there. And so that's going to be really interesting. It's going to be interesting to see what happens when Jones comes back because, you know, this is an interesting side that is full of left-sided attackers and full of right-sided midfielders. So I think it's interesting because, like, Szoboszlai, at his very beginning of his career with Leipzig, he was playing primarily almost entirely on that left side. And then they switched him to the right. So I think he's one of the rare ones that can be comfortable on that left side playing in the mids. You know what I mean? I still think that he's an outside attacking player. I don't think he's a winger, but I think he's best playing in that like sort of quasi attacking mid spot. And I think that's really where his value is. So it's going to be interesting to see what this new manager does. Like, I'm going to miss Klopp and everything that he does and how important he is for this community. But I am starting to get some feelings for the first time where like, I'm sort of looking forward to like the newness and not like it's a little bit scary. Right. But I'm also like, it's kind of like, you know, any new relationship, you know, there's going to be some positives that weren't there before. Right. Yeah. So like, I'm really interested to see with some of these, like the Gakpos, the Szoboszlais, like these players that sort of seem like mismatched parts that we've been getting some good results with. I'm really curious to see what happens from a formational standpoint with some of these players.
Yeah, because it feels like there's a lot of movable parts. And, you know, we don't even like throw in names like Carvalho and stuff like that that were here once that we couldn't have a spot for and all that. So that's the interesting parts. And that's why I think, like, I mean, I've been saying this offseason is probably the most interesting one that we've had in like years. Because it's not like, sure, oh, do they sign this guy or that guy? And like, you know, one or two signings. It's more about, more than signings, it's going to be more about who plays where, who stays, who goes and stuff like that. But I mean, going back to the game, and especially like the, you know, in the second half, obviously those chances we were creating and we weren't scoring. And Gallo, you were talking about earlier, all that resulted in two goals and obviously the one that got chalked off. So Klopp was talking about this. I mean, I kind of mentioned this in the morning show as well. Klopp was talking about this in the post-match. And this is the fifth or sixth time I've heard him say this now, where he says we were rushing things in the final third. We told the boys to calm down, to take their time, to look for the extra pass or, you know, like, you know, be more clinical, the extra touch and stuff like that. Why do you think it almost seems like it wasn't as much of an issue before the rush that, you know, he keeps referring to? And it is true. There are a couple of positions in the first half, a couple of situations where Mo normally would take one more touch and he like shoots it instead. And obviously it's right at the goalie or is sky high and stuff like that. Is it the newness? Obviously take Mo out of the equation. But when you look at everybody else, I mean, look at that midfield. They weren't there last year. Is it the pressure getting more to these newer guys?
I do. I think it is pressure getting to the new guys. And even in Mo's case, I think there's pressure for Mo to carry it forward for the new guys, right? Like there's pressure on Mo that I've been here before. I'm the guy, I'm supposed to score these goals. And maybe he, you know, in one or two cases in the first half, I felt he took one touch too many. And in other cases, I was like, why is he shooting that first time and not taking a touch there and getting it out? You know, I still want to convince the man that the foot that is hooked to his right leg works. Like, I feel like if he could convince himself that his right foot did work, like, he would actually score more goals. I think in some instances for me, that whole rushing, I think is I hate to say it, this comes with Klopp making the announcement to leave. Every match is literally, I mean, Klopp said it the other day, from here on out, every match is like a final. It's felt that way for a month and a half. It's almost felt that way. I mean, the players have to answer about it every day. Every question they get asked is what it's like playing for Klopp and how you're going to try to win it for Klopp. And I just think that they have added pressure on them too. And I think anyone who doesn't believe that is unrealistic. And I think it's part of what's making this so special to watch. And as it unfolds in front of you, especially with all the excitement and the drama, is that on top of all the drama, they have more pressure than anyone else in this league right now. From their supporters, from, yeah, you know, on themselves, they genuinely want to win. A lot of people say we're trying to do this for the skipper, we're trying to do this for the manager. I genuinely believe they are trying to do this for that man so that he can have two titles before he leaves, so that people can't say he only won one when there weren't supporters in the crowd in a COVID year and all the bullshit that people like to say, right? I think this is as much about the players sending Klopp out as it is about the supporters sending Klopp out.
Yeah, I mean, that's fair. Brian says, I don't think we were rushing. I think we're making bad decisions and trying to find perfection. I mean, that's not my words, Klopp's words, but I do agree with him. And I've heard him say it before that, you know, they were just not taking their time. And some of those bad decisions are because they're unnecessarily quick decisions, as opposed to really like kind of like, almost like letting the game slow down for you by being calm and stuff like that, because like a little split seconds, obviously, in that pace of a game can make a big difference. I do understand the players probably wanting the story to end on a high note for Klopp. I mean, obviously, they're going to win it for themselves as well, but I'm sure they want the story to end well and a good note with like multiple trophies and stuff. But do you think, Bickler, that is adding to the pressure, or this is the pressure either way of a, like a league title race that some of these guys have never been in the Premier League?
Yeah, I think this entire season is just a pressure cooker between, like, you know, the fact that they are unexpectedly thrust into the middle of the title race. And then, you know, shortly after that, you get the announcement. Like, listen, like, I think we can talk about, like, Klopp can talk about players rushing stuff. I think that's partially true. I think it's, like, to me, it's not a major mystery. You go down early, you start rushing shit to get back into the game. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, that's what happens when you concede early, right? Because not only are you looking for the leveler, but you're looking for the winner. So you're thinking about two goals. You're not thinking about one.
Yeah.
So, you know, where Jurgen is coming from as a manager, he's thinking, like, let's just get the one. We got 85 minutes to find two, right?
Yeah.
Players are thinking, we want to feel like we are not losing this match, right? So, like, yeah, you're looking for two, and especially on the attacking end, that's how you think, right? So, sometimes you're missing that extra pass that you know is there because you're having a go. And I think the other part of that is just fatigue, right? I think some of the decision making has just been bad because I think these guys are tired, and I think a lot of it's cleaned up a little bit this week. You know, it didn't seem as bad as it's been in the past. I think we've seen that. I feel like I've seen that the most with Diaz, and I felt like he played more within himself this week. I felt like he kind of played to his own strengths and then did more facilitating than I've seen him do in the last couple of weeks, which I think was nice.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think, you know, when you look at Diaz, Gal, you can never fault the effort. And I thought, you know, especially in this game, out of the front three, he was the one who was constantly asking questions and like challenging defenders, taking people on. And, you know, I mentioned it like in the game. At one point, he was just like pressing on the right-hand side because he kind of got lost where he was at, because he kind of does play it like street ball. But that's part of his game. And that's, I think, that like not being predictable is what makes him kind of like dangerous, because he doesn't even know where he's going, leave alone the defender who's trying to defend him. What did you make of that front three's performance? I mean, we talked about the pressure, but not basically being able to produce as much. I mean, they got into the situation. Should we be just happy with the fact that when you get in all these situations, obviously goals are going to come? In a normal game, Mo probably has a hat trick.
I mean, Mo should have scored two in the first half, and he should have set Darwin up for a sitter. I mean, those are just guarantees. And I know Kazi jumped all over me. Oh, they're half chances. Mo Salah in the box with no defender in front of him on his left foot. The ball should be on frame. If not in the next.
Says, I mean, that if it was Nunez, he'd be slamming him. So there's that.
Correct. And the ball that Mo, if Mo doesn't try to take that ball with his left foot to shoot it, he brings it down with his right and just crosses it. It's a roll tap in. And I mean, he just brings the ball down, slides it across the 6 yard box, and Nunez tapping it in. So, and the game's over. I thought they were pretty good all in all. I thought Nunez was a little quiet in the second half. I wasn't surprised at all when he did get subbed off eventually. I thought he was a little quiet in the second half. I thought he pressed really well in the first half, but to your point, I thought both him and Diaz were kind of pressing on their own at times. And it's great when you, like Paul said at one point, like, they're going to turn the ball over in their own box if they keep playing it out from the back. And Nunez literally took the ball off of the goal kick. And I was like, I mean, and let's be honest, him getting that ball on frame from on his ass and just throwing his hips at it was really, really impressive. And if it had gone in again and it was Mo, we'd be having a parade for goal of the year. And if Nunez does it, it's a bum who doesn't know where he's going. I thought he was good all in all. I didn't love the second half substitutions. I thought they came way too late. And then when they came in, just didn't feel like any of the subs really added anything to it. So I think the front three was good. It has to get better. And I'm hoping that Jota coming back will light the fire under them, because he's someone who can at least take two of the three of their spots at any one moment.
Yeah, and I think, you know, you get some like quality finishing, and not to mention creating as well. I mean, we always talk about Jota's finishing, but you go watch like certain games, he has made some critical passes in the final third, starting counters and stuff like that too. Brian was talking about this, yeah, I think it was this morning as well, like the energy spent both mentally and physically by the players to see Klopp off is going to be detrimental to the incoming manager. I really feel like in some ways, though, you're going to get like certain players more excited about, you know, their new role. But at the same time, I guess you can get some players that are not excited about their new role. I think that kind of like evens out and really depends on the manager. Speaking of, if this was, which we knew before going into the game that they would talk about it all broadcast, if this was an audition for De Zerbi to get the Liverpool job, Bickler, are you calling him for a second interview?
Oh, man, dude. I don't know, because I think here's my problem with that. The thing that I love about Brighton isn't necessarily De Zerbi. It's how they do business, and we have Edwards. So, like, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know that I'd be necessarily like down on it, right? I mean, I think it would be a decent hire. It's probably not the one that I would make. I still think, you know, I know this is unpopular. I still think Nagelsmann is the closest that you can get from a tactical standpoint. A high press system built on the same principles. It is the closest thing from a footballing standpoint you can get to it. He has the flexibility to play out of a normal 4-3-3. He has played with three in the back. He likes a 4-2-3-1. He can play just about anything you want. And I think that's important for the Premier League. And I think the dude from Sporting is actually really, really the closest you can get to Klopp from a charisma standpoint and from a personality standpoint. And I know that, like, listen, if Edwards loves him and Edwards loves him, that probably means a lot. Like, for me, like, not knowing all the details, like, I trust that.
Yeah, I'm on the same. Honestly, you say it's not a popular opinion, but I have really seen, as seen over here, still a big no for De Zerbi. I've seen, in terms of polarizing Galley, De Zerbi seems to be a more polarizing name than all other names mentioned, like Namesman, Amorim, and stuff like that. I think everybody's kind of like, we don't know enough about Amorim to be polarizing, because everybody is like kind of like Bickler. They're like, if they like him based on what we're seeing, you look at the career path, you look at the style, you're like, meh, okay.
What we know about Edwards is he loves taking players out of that league.
Yeah,
you know, he loves taking players out of the Portuguese league.
So where are you at with the De Zerbi? Is it a thumbs up, thumbs down? Couldn't care.
Nah, I mean, I'm kind of neutral on De Zerbi, and I have been since day one. I wouldn't have had a problem. I'll say this. I think some of the hate is the recency bias that people just, he's in the Premier League and they think he's not good enough because Brighton hasn't kicked on this year. But like, he took over a Brighton team that turns over its best players, both of the years he's been there, they've sold his two best players each summer.
Yeah.
And what's he's done? They've gotten better. And like everyone heralded Graham Potter, and then he got the Chelsea job and he failed miserably. But De Zerbi went to Brighton, took Graham Potter's players and got better, played better football, better numbers, better attacking. Juventus wants him. Madrid wanted to interview him. I've said this before. You don't have to hire him. If you don't, he will replace Pep Guardiola at Manchester City. And there are some people in England that are like, don't give that man that kind of talent. Because you give him that kind of talent, it's over. He beat Real Madrid by 4 goals with Shakhtar Donetsk at the Bernabeu to knock them out of the Champions League. He didn't get this job by like happen circumstance. Like, he's been a great, great manager. He will coach big, big jobs. And Brian Shelton might be right. Maybe he'll end up at Barcelona. That might actually be the perfect type of a job for him. I think he has too much of the hothead personality. He's a little too Italian for Barcelona. And I don't know that they allow you to smoke that much on the sidelines at the Camp Nou. And clearly we don't have any problems with the cigarettes all around Anfield, because that man smokes everywhere but on camera when Jurgen Klopp. I don't think De Zerbi is the guy for the job right now. I don't believe he would be a bad manager, though. And I think the people out here that are calling for him to be a bad manager and then dropping things like, I'll take Gary O'Neill, like, that's just... These are the crazy shit that are being said because they're trying to knock him down. No one in their right mind has watched 1 minute of a Mora manage or really understands what Sporting does, because I dare you to watch some of that Portuguese football because it will put you to sleep. So everyone talks about how exciting of a manager he is. He plays with 3 attackers. He doesn't play anywhere near the same type of system. I like the idea of him coming because there's 2 or 3 players I would love to steal from the Sporting team.
Yeah, I mean, that's for one. That was one thing about, actually, I was big on Alonso because I was like, there are a couple of guys I like in Leverkusen he can bring along more than him coming along as well. But and one thing is, I mean, this is a good point. I lost it somewhere here. I think it was Brian. Yes, that's probably the one thing that I worry about the Nagelsmann is I think I pick Amorim over him. That's one of the reasons. The charisma thing, like the way he carries himself, is one that Bickler was talking about. And the other one is the fact that he can be here right away. And he doesn't have to, you know, especially in the transition year where we have so many questions that's in terms of what we're going to do with the young kids and, you know, all these people coming back, who's going to come, who's going to go. I would like somebody to walk in as Klopp is walking out in an ideal situation. And we don't know, I don't know like when the hell the Euros end, but I'm assuming sometime in July or something like that. So, yeah, that's interesting. I know, like I say, I feel like the Zerbi name is very polarizing. People, I really want him. And that could be right. That could be the fact that we see a lot more of him. So there's a lot more judgment on him as opposed to some of the other names, though. One thing, you know, we're going back to Nunez, and I do want to get to the City game because of this. They were talking a lot about it. I think Roy Keane maybe made the comments about, like, Haaland, because you do see when Nunez gets taken out of the game, I didn't think he was very effective going forward, but he does so much off the ball, not only defensively press-wise, but making those runs and creating space and stuff like that. And, you know, you don't get that when Haaland gets shut down. He does get shut down. He does not, you know, contribute to the rest of the play. That was an extremely boring game to watch. We kind of like did a live watch along on Discord. Bickler was there, Cersei, and stuff. We kind of like chatted throughout. But best result for us, Bickler, at the end of the day?
Yeah, best result for sure. Yeah, I mean, and then, you know, the casual neutral, I feel like probably half of them fell asleep by halftime. It was a rough watch for sure, but yeah, best result. We'll take that. But yeah, it was a tough watch for sure.
So as he says, we also need to like look at coaching team that comes with the new coach. Linda's attention to detail is phenomenal. I mean, you got to figure whoever is coming is putting everybody in the suitcase and bringing them with him. Yeah. Like if a Murm is coming, you know, these guys usually, because whoever replaces him is bringing in his guys too. So all these guys are going to travel together. So I would think both of them would be us. Yeah, bring in their own people. Boarfest is right, Galley. I mean, what do we learn from that game? Are you shocked that Arsenal went over there and said, we're cool with the draw.
I am. I Arteta has coached this team to go out and attack victories, to score five. When you're up four, score three more. And it's not just for goal difference. It's for winning mentality and all this. All he's preached. I understand why some people are commending him. And maybe with 10 minutes to go in a nil-nil draw, you shoot up shop. But to give up, to come in ahead of another team in the table with the chance to go back to top of the table and bury City by all accounts and really make it a two race and a race where you're in control of on top. I think to show up and literally play for a nil-nil draw almost as if you were the inferior little brother just trying to hang with your big brother and his buddies on the playground felt to me like it was weak and felt to me like his players couldn't have loved it. Now, maybe they felt good when they got in their bus and they took the coach back to London, right? And or the flight or whatever they did to get back home. Maybe they felt good about it. For me, outside, I said this to Paul on the Premier League show, outside of Gabriel and Saliba, who I thought were really, really good in their center back tandem, just doing their job. You got to keep a clean sheet. You want to beat City, right? That's step one. Center backs did that. Everything else, I mean, I'd give everyone like a five. I'd give the manager a three.
I mean, defending wise, Bickler, I mean, they did well. Hence, it was boring to watch because they did not first of all, to shut out City is a big task by itself. And I thought they kept their shape well. You saw some guys who don't normally maybe do as much defending, do a lot of defending to be able to kind of keep up with City. But while it looked pathetic, and like Gally says, it almost looked like they were playing Sheffield United at home or something. Sometimes they would just like aimless to kick the ball away just to get it out and City would come back and stuff. But at the same time, do you think it's the goal differential that they were counting on and said, you know what, a draw is fine? I almost feel like if the goal differential is on our side, I don't think Arsenal goes out there as content with a draw. Because now all they need is for us to lose points in one game to gain the advantage back. Whereas if the goal differential was there, I almost feel like they would approach it differently.
Yeah, so you can make the argument that the smart move here is to look at the fixtures down the line and think that you can get away with the draw here and then beat them down the stretch based on fixtures, right? Mm-hmm. But I think that's kind of a losing mentality because you're not thinking about the 2 points you have to make up ahead of you, right? Like it's not City and Arsenal at the top of the table tied, right? So like, and I think if you look at this side, and I told Gally, like, I feel like this is the weakest City side that we've seen in the last 7 or 8 seasons. Outside of Doku, there's nobody that's going to take the top off from a pace standpoint. So like sitting that deep with two rows of four with that midfield, I think is criminal. And I fully expect Unai Emery to go out this week and show exactly what I thought we should have seen at Arsenal. And that is like I think that you can overrun this City side. I mean, obviously, you got to respect them. They still are a talented side. But I thought that Arsenal came in and essentially just set up for a draw, and that was really shameful to see. In a title race of this magnitude with a City side this weekend, either Arteta was scared, he has too much respect for Guardiola. I just didn't think he played it right. Whatever the reason was, I don't think that was the right – I don't think it was the right tactic. I don't think it – I think that – man, if I had Odegaard in that midfield, I would have gone after City. And I really think that they missed an opportunity there. I think City can be had. And I think that was probably the frustrating thing is to sit there and, you know, basically have 27% possession in that game from an Arsenal standpoint is really, that's really bad, especially when you're watching City struggle to force the ball into Haaland and just not do the things that you're used to seeing City do.
I mean, Kevin De Bruyne looks way off. I was talking about in morning show as well. There were so many moments in that game when Kevin De Bruyne gets the ball, is able to look up and put a ball in the box. And that's usually like the kiss of death, similar to when Trent can look in the box and, you know, like send the ball where he wants to. And they were always off targets. And I think, you're right. And they were not only is the City team that's not, you know, kicking in all cylinders. It's a City team missing a lot of players as well from like after the international breaks, and they lost another one. So for them to not take advantage, playing with their backup, I mean, there were so many other things. And going back to what like Dave was saying, you know, I feel like if City did that, if the roles were reversed, Galley, you look at the fixtures and you could see, you can basically make a case for an informed City to kind of win the rest of their games. But I feel like I look at Arsenal's schedule and
brutal.
It's a lot tougher than everybody else. So it's not like they're going to be like, oh, we're going to run the table. So let's take a draw over here and then we're good.
Yeah, they've won at Spurs, I think, twice in 12 years. I mean, they got to go to Spurs. That's not going to be an easy match. They have their home and home. You know, they have their European tire with Bayern. You know, they have to play Villa. And I was saying to Paul, we can all clown about United. Anyone who thinks that Manchester United won't be up to try to stop Arsenal from winning the league, even if it means us or City winning the league in match week 37, because they might be playing for European places. They might be playing just to qualify for the Europa League or the Conference League. Yeah. Like, there's going to be a lot at hand. And I just feel like this was a match for Arsenal to go. If Arsenal wanted to win the league, I genuinely believe they had to win this match. And I think they went into it thinking if we draw, we might just be okay. And I think you give a team like Liverpool that confidence to know what they need to do. And I think Liverpool now really starts to like bob and weave and just focus on just grinding results. And I'm not sure they can win every match, but I don't think either of the other two sides will win all theirs. And for that, I said it earlier, Paul said it too, and we're crazy people on April 1st, and we're not fooling around. We both believe Liverpool is going to win the league. I think yesterday was a huge turning point. I think Liverpool wins this league.
By the way, I gained additional respect for you guys not to pull a crappy April Fool's joke, so congratulations on that. We didn't get... figured like it'd be a bad father joke or something like that, but maybe not.
Nope.
Brian says, which I think you're... Yeah, I mean, we've been talking about this for a while, right? The Spurs and Villa games that everybody has in common. But aside from that, like you say, Arsenal had... I think they still have Chelsea, am I right, in their schedule? Arsenal plays Chelsea? I don't know. Is it at home?
I believe they have them as well.
Let's... Hold on, let me let's pull it up over here. Uncle Google. They play Luton Town midweek. We're gonna talk about our game as well because I almost feel like it's the same situation where it could be like a banana peel kind of a game going at the scale. Yeah, they still play Chelsea at home. They play Brighton. They go to Brighton. They go to Old Trafford. I mean, they're going to play Everton at home. I know Everton is shit, but at that time, Everton might be playing for...
and they go to Spurs.
Yeah, and they go to Spurs. So it's like a tough, tough schedule going ahead. So it's not like I say, if it was the other way around, you look at City's schedule, you can kind of see him making a case for, we're not going to lose any points from now. And let's get this straight, too. There's way too much talk. Pep started it, obviously, saying, like, they're out of the title race, blah, blah, blah. It's in, like... You know, like they're not the favorites, which they're not, obviously, not numbers wise, but I don't count them out by any means, just on that note alone, because I can see them still getting 27 points from those last 9 games. And it really depends on what the other guys get. But let's talk about Thursday real quick. Sheffield, and then you got Old Trafford. Mind you, United is taking on Chelsea as well on Thursday. So it's not like they get an extra day and they have a tough game as well. How much of a rotation do you expect, or do we just go out and win and then worry about Sunday afterwards, Bickler?
I think you're going to probably see a very similar lineup, to be quite honest. I think off the international break, I think the situation where we're in, I think on top by two, you can't afford to really drop points. I'm hoping we see heavy rotation, like in terms of like we come out with a strong lineup. We go up 4 goals within 8 minutes, and then we sub everybody in the 35th minute.
Sounds like a plan.
Right? It's like, I mean, that's how you do it on FIFA. So, no, I am hoping that we come out with a relatively strong lineup, and then we just, you know, run away with this thing and bleed in some subs in the second half.
I mean, I think out of everybody, Jones is the only one that's possibly going to be in the fold, Galley. How about you in terms of the lineup? You would think Konate would be back in action now? In that lineup, but how much of a rotation? I don't know about Robertson and stuff. Obviously, we'll find out more like during the week with the press conference and stuff, but I can see him saving Robertson for the weekend as well.
I will say this right now. I don't think Robertson will be back for the weekend. I think he's out longer than that. I think they're just trying to spin off that it's not a real long thing, and they don't want people questioning it personally. If Simicast doesn't play on Thursday against Sheffield, it doesn't matter who the new manager is. He should have an agent calling every club in all of Europe, because that screams a match where you give your actual left back a little bit of, because I think Connor Bradley needs a break, to be honest, because Trent won't be back for United. Yeah. And I think Bradley doesn't need to play three games in 8 days and have the third game be at United again, where, let's be real, he got absolutely lit the bleep up by Garnacho for the entire match that he played against him. So I think that if you could, I think you have to make changes. And I think Gakpo starts 100% for Nunez. It has to happen. Really? He needs confidence, and you're not going to get it by bringing him on so he can loaf around, and then people can – I mean, even you were ripping him for his 10-minute cameo where he just drifted in a match that we needed him to show some effort in. I mean, if he wants to play here and he wants to figure it out, and I think he starts this match. And I think maybe even Harvey might get a start. I think 3 games in 8 days, knowing you're then going to play 3 more games in the next 11 days – has to be taken into account. And this is Sheffield United. And to be honest, the kids should be able to beat them. They should.
Yeah, I'm glad you kind of brought up Gakpo, because, yeah, it was one of the Gravenberch could be in the mix too, because he's been on the bench.
Oh, that's a good call, actually.
And so what is the deal? Where are you at with Gakpo? I mean, we kind of talked about him. I even gave him the benefit of the doubt. I don't think he's, like, I was talking about it just last week, and that's why I was yelling at the TV. I was like, I was just sticking up for you last week, saying, you know, it's the same body language that he had when he came. That's the way he carries himself. And when he was producing, we were all cool because it was calm as you like. When he's not producing, he's like, oh, so lackadaisical and stuff like that. But he comes in that game. You're going to play with the extra time, 10, 15 minutes. There's no reason for you to conserve energy or anything like that. For him to not go full speed when pressing, is it just a mindset thing, or is, like, it almost looks like pouting at this point, which is why I'm probably aggravated. And I'm not saying it is, but that's how I perceive it. When you come in for a game for 10 minutes to close things out and put in that effort, and that's the performance you give.
Certainly not a great look. I wonder, like, how much of this is just I feel like the demeanor is very similar to Verge, right? Like, how much of that is that? And, like, I don't want to say stretched. It's a Dutch thing. I don't want to say it's a Dutch thing. But then we have Dirk Kuyt, who's like, you know what I mean?
And Gravenberch isn't that much difference. And Gravenberch isn't that much difference. He doesn't ever look that high or that low or –
So maybe there's a generational Dutch thing going on. I don't know. Like, I mean,
Dirk Kuyt depleted that
generational Dutch oven.
Yeah, like,
we just found a name for the podcast. It's a generational Dutch oven.
Yeah, I mean, you're right though. He does have that same body language.
I think there is probably not another player on the side that is in need of another manager as bad as Cody Gakpo. And I know, like, and I don't mean that to be, like, hot take-ish or argumentative. I just think he needs a manager that could come in and give him a definitive role. And I don't think that's Jurgen Klopp right now.
Fabio Carvalho, Kostas Tsimikas. No, I mean, it's not even – we're not even that – it's not even, like, making fun of or, like, poking a joke at. I think we saw some really good things. And I think this is what happens with Klopp, right? I think Klopp falls in love with players – and just as quickly, he falls out of love with him.
Yeah.
And I think that's what happened to him this year. Darwin finally figured out the 2 or 3 things. He was like, if you would just do this when I say it, you could play all the time. And then he started doing it, and then the other things came with it. And I think at the same time, I think Gakpo not only fell off, he never got to consistently play anywhere. But there was talk when he was going to United that their biggest fear was that he never had to fight for anything ever, because he had come up at PSV and he was a star from the time he was 12 years old. He was on the first team.
The Holland thing. 18. Same thing you said about, like, Holland.
Yep.
And I don't know that he's ever had to work for anything. And I don't mean it like he's not a hard worker, but I think, like, kid came up on the playground and took his lunch money. And I'm not sure Cody Gakpo knows how to get his job back. And he doesn't look like a guy who rips up trees in training. I'm just going to go out on a limb because he doesn't rip up trees when he gets 10 minutes of time at the end of a match.
And I think that's the frustrating part to me. I mean, you're trying to earn minutes. That's the best way to do it. And, we've kind of partially because I think he looks lost at all times when he's in there is mainly because we play them anywhere and everywhere. But we've done that with other players as well. And now he's done for good because Football Flashback just put a bet on him. So we know how that's going to go. Yep. 2 assists against Sheffield on Thursday nights. And then, he says, do you think it's possible that, there's a reason the odds were that great.
The odds are good because the odds that anyone gets 2 assists in a game, not Salah, are probably low.
Yeah, right? I mean, I don't know. Like I say, I like the kid. I like his game overall. And I really think we kind of, so I was kind of like doing his, being his lawyer.
The other thing, though, is that even though when he is putting in work, it doesn't look like he's putting in. You know what I mean? He's got that thing. You know what I mean? It's just a different, it's a very different look in terms of.
That's why, that whole body language thing was getting on my nerves because, it's the same body language he had when he was like scoring that goal against, goals against United and stuff like that. But when you come back and, you're trying to earn minutes and that's already the knock on you, you would think you would kind of like go above and beyond and give 10 minutes. This is not like a 30-minute performance he put in. You're coming in to close out a game. Didn't get to mention that a lot. So, I mean, we kind of like went back and forth and we talked about the post-match as well. But finishing of the game looked awkward at times, Bickler, where we were too kind of like controlling the ball in the beginning. And then we were like, let's go attack, get another one. And then now we were going all out. Is that kind of like this team not being used to in these situations a lot?
Oh yeah, I think it was a little bit disjointed. I'm sure there is a part of it was a fluctuation between finding the third, like trying to find that third, and then trying not to be vulnerable in the back too. So there's probably a balancing act that led to that. I just think I think that this goes back to our Premier League conversation we had earlier today with Galley. Like I think that all these sides are tired, and I think that like we're seeing all these goals around the league, but I think the goals are happening. But the finishing rates are incredibly low. Yeah. Like we were talking about this 1-1 game with United. There are 42 shots in that game. Yeah. 42. I mean, there's goals happening, but I think we're not seeing the conversion rate that we're typically used to seeing because I think these squads, no matter how big you get these squads, when you're jamming 8 fixtures into 3 fixtures into 8 days, right? Like, I mean, I think that's going to cause the quality to go down overall in general.
See, I think one thing is, I mean, Klopp talked about this, and I do agree. I mean, as nervous, even though it's my lifestyle, I mean, it has changed over the last 5-6 years where even though I'm nervous, maybe I'm not crapping my pants at least when we're up by 1 and trying to close out a game because we kind of learn that we can control and close out a game over time, right? But at the same time, it just looked odd because for 5-10 minutes, we were doing that. We were doing what we do, containing the ball, keeping the ball, containing them, possession and stuff. And then something happened. We were going like crazy. Even Gomez is up there in the other box. And
that was the one that drove me crazy.
Like, back here, there's only 4 of us back here. And it was just like, what are we doing there? And I just felt, is that just not being used to that, getting caught in the moment, just – or is it just how Brighton plays? They almost like lure you to do that as well.
I do think they lure you to do it. I think the other part is I think as that match went on, we made so many substitutions so late in the match. I honestly feel like the players who were finishing the match were so kind of disjointed. You had Gakpo kind of loofing around. You had Elliot just get on there for like 20 plus minutes. We didn't make a sub till what, 71st minute, 70,
like 81 and then, or something like that.
Right. We tried to make it at like 75, and then we elected to not send Harvey on like 5 times in a row. I'm like, you're just waiting for Darwin to get a stupid yellow and get a 2-match ban. Like, this makes no sense. Like, the substitutions made no sense. I don't think it helped how we finished, but I do think at times this team kind of forgets where they are in moments. Like, They're defending. We're passing sideways. We're taking time off the clock. And then all of the sudden, out of nowhere, we decide we're going to break forward with our left back into the box and he's going to like slalom and turn the ball over. And you're like, what did you just do? Now we have numbers going the other way. And in classic fashion, Endo just tackled the guy. Like literally just like complete NFL football tackle.
I give Gakpo credit too. He pulled that once as well. He just like yanked the guy back. He was like, I'll take one for the team.
Oh, he had a yellow before he literally broke a sweat. He hadn't done a thing. And David Coot was like, I got one of these for you.
Verge with possibly the softest yellow you'll ever see.
Ever.
There were some like ridiculous. Yeah, we didn't even go into the refereeing because, I mean, obviously it's going to be the same story all over again. But so we're thinking Gakpo getting some action tomorrow, even some Dutch action going on Thursday, I should say, not tomorrow. Let's take some quick predictions on the way out. Bickler, you were the trivia star. Let's give us a prediction for the game.
Yeah, star, relatively loosely, we're going to use that term. For Brighton. I'm going to do it again. I'm going to go 4-0 here.
Like it.
I'm going to go bigger. I'm going to go 5-0. They're playing for the goal difference. I think they try to score early, to Paul's point. You know, Mo likes himself a lopsided half. Like maybe he gets himself a first half Hattie and he can come off or something. I could see them really tipping the scales and just pushing it full tilt. Make up the goal difference.
So Timuchin first half in FIFA, if you will. By the way, if you do dabble in FIFA, we're still recruiting for the tournament to take on Paul Bickler over here. No, Paul, are you even in that tournament on Discord?
I'm not, no.
That's disappointing.
Nobody wants to join the tournament so they can figure out who's going to finish second, you asshole. Nobody cares, man.
I know my limits. Really, really good players in there. I know my limits.
I love FIFA and manager mode. And then I like, you know, watching you beat 9-year-olds online. That's my wheelhouse.
If you sign up for Patreon, you can see me and Mateusz beating 9-year-olds online together or losing to them even worse in the co-op mode. So,
Dude, are we able to hear do you guys have a chat stream going? Like, are we able to hear who you're playing with? I want to hear some 9-year-old just trash
talking. No,
that was a good goal.
I wish it would be nice. It would be nice.
You play Mickey Mouse?
Yeah, I was like, not Mickey Mouse, a 9-year-old.
You play Mickey Mouse?
Hey, dude, I don't care who it is on.
I really want to hear some 8-year-old like, you suck. Where's that last name from? It's gay.
That'd be awesome. Your ass.
You know, saying all the stuff awesome. You can't say anymore.
Where's your ass?
You get that sometimes in like Call of Duty, right? Like, you know, like when you kill them, you got their thing for like 10 seconds. And yeah, I mean, some online gaming, yeah, it wonders. That's probably why the EA doesn't have it, because there can be some ridiculous language being used, like over the top obnoxious Turkish delight. Yeah, I go with Turkish Stallion, but yes, so you can join our Discord channel. We'll shoot an invite over there as well. And like I say, on the Patreon, Mateusz and I dabble in the co-op action. Yep. But yeah, we're not even going there. Let's wrap this up before it gets really out of control. Thanks as always. You guys have an excellent week. I'll be back Wednesday morning with the morning breakfast. By then, we should have Klopp's press conference and have more updates as well. Bickler is losing it over here.
I can't. Just
I'm already planning on the dog torture of tonight. But have an excellent week, everybody. We'll see you guys later.